Members, we're going to get going. We're still one short before we bring the meeting formally to order. We're going to start with House File, Mr. Franson, if you'd come down. House File 1796. It's Representative, I don't know, Mr. Franson, there's two of them here. Do you care which one you do first?
Mr. Chairman, I'd prefer the 1797.
Okay. Excuse me for a minute. Members, I'd like to bring the Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Committee to order. Representative Fabian, could you move the minutes from our last meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Discussion to the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved. Representative Hackbart, as many of you know, is a volunteer fireman, and on his way in this morning had to go to an accident. I'll move House. Do we have? We don't have anything on here. These are going to be for informational purposes. We don't have any amendments this morning. Mr. Franson, if you could identify yourself. I know there's other people to testify on this bill also. If you could identify yourself for the record, we're going to do House File 1797 for possible inclusion in a future bill. Mr. Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Doug Franson. I'm an attorney lobbyist for the Minnesota United Snowmobilers Association. With me is Mr. Terry Hutchinson, an avid snowmobile and a snowmobiler, a real motorhead, and a former president of our organization. He is speaking as an individual. 1797, Mr. Chairman, is a simple bill. And I might be so bold as to say it's a non-controversial bill. It arises from an old controversy relating metal traction devices on snowmobiles being used on asphalt trails. A number of years ago, many years ago, when these traction devices first became popular, there was concern about the potential damage that could occur to asphalt, and the legislature spent a considerable amount of time coming up with a solution, both to facilitate the use of these devices and they're recognizing their safety benefit, but also to preserve the assets of our asphalt trail system throughout the state. In essence, the law right now is that metal traction devices cannot be used on any state trail unless specifically opened by the commissioner. And the reason a trail would be opened is basically a balancing of the various equities in terms of necessary connections, is there a reasonable alternative route, etc. For the past few years, we've been working with the Department of Natural Resources in two separate administrations and have come to agreement on a simple principle. As a matter of public policy, it makes more sense to have the law say that these trails are open for studded snowmobiles unless the commissioner closes them for the benefit of the trail. It's not nearly as dramatic a concept as it sounds. We've worked with the department. This commissioner and the prior commissioner had no intent to open any existing trails that are closed now, nor to close any trails that are open. This is part of our modernization effort where we look to the future, and every time the state creates a new trail, it would add the administrative burden of going through an exception process for the department. And we think it's better that the commissioner, whoever he or she may be as we move forward into the future, basically deal with the blank slate, make a reasoned expertise determination of whether studded traction devices are appropriate for a given trail, and proceed accordingly. Mr. Myers here, but it is my understanding that the department is supporting this as well as we are, and I believe the department under Commissioner Holston supported this bill as well.
Thank you, Mr. Franson. Mr. Meyer or Mr. Payer, are you prepared to make some remarks? As you're coming down, Mr. Meyer, I'm trying to understand. I happened to gas up at a filling station right next to the Paul Bunyan Trail yesterday morning, and the gas station attendant made mention to me that he had seen two snowmobiles on the trail this year and had one snowmobile at the gas pumps the entire season, and using the trail not for snowmobile but for bicycling, I have noticed the stud marks up near the where you come up to the stop signs is where the stud marks from when it was way back in the beginning, and it's never been overlaid. What kind of a program will the department have in regards to trails like that that don't sometimes have a lot of snow on them?
Mr. Chairman, members, I can bring Ron Potter down for specific questions. To the bill in particular, this bill is just, it keeps things consistent to where we have our ATV trails posted. So these trails would be posted closed. They'd be closed unless posted open. So rather than confusing people on all the different, is it open if it's posted, if it's closed, if it's posted. And Mr. Potter can address those specific concerns if you want to about the Paul Bunyan Trail.
No, I think you got, I just wanted to make one observation, and you've addressed it, make some consistency. I don't have a problem with the policy. Additional discussion? Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Franson. Mr. Franson, do you want to roll into, anybody else have anything? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I also have noticed those stud marks on that trail up from like Walker down to a Brainerd, that area. But I guess my question would be, do you anticipate changes in terms of more trails being opened with this law change, or would it be pretty much the status quo?
Mr. Pyre, I'm wondering if you want to, that might be a good question. Representative Anderson, I'm glad you're visiting the neighborhood that I visit, too. You're welcome to stop by anytime. Mr. Pyre, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Good morning. My name's Ron Potter with Parks and Trails. Mr. Chairman, we don't, on that particular trail on the Paul Bunyan, that is closed to studs now from Brainerd up. We don't anticipate that would change. Anything that is currently closed would remain that way. And again, as trails are brought on, we don't want to have to go and build alternate routes, spend that additional money if it's not necessary. So they'll be evaluated as they come on, but we don't see any significant change.
Thank you. I have a question for Representative Deal. Representative Deal, up in your country, it's kind of a different world up there. Are some of the trails paved up there where you seem to almost always have snow? And I even just noticed recently you are blessed up there to still have decent snow cover. I saw some video of the area. Would there be paved trails up there where you usually have so much cover it doesn't really matter?
Well, Mr. Chairman, there are paved trails, in essence, not quite like the you're describing here, but there's in International Falls where their streets are used. I mean, studs would have an impact, but frankly, I have never in the time that I've been 10 years in the legislature, in my legislative district, had anyone come to me and even discuss studs relative to blacktop. But yet, if you go to the city of International Falls, down to 11th Street and Highway 53, where you cross literally thousands of snowmobiles are crossing now in city streets and state highways that are all paved in that neighborhood, there's never been any discussion in the county, even though I don't represent that area. As you know, I live and do business up in there, and my family is from there, and no county commissioner, no city council person, no highway department person has ever come to me and suggested that we should consider outlawing studs in that area. Now, other than that, as you know, there aren't very many blacktop areas that you drive trail on, but there is an abundance of snow. So, you know.
Thank you, Representative.
If you're tired of the Paul Bunyan, we accept you up in our area.
That's good to hear. Mr. Franzen, House File 1796.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 1796 is also a piece of legislation before you that comes from ongoing discussions with the department. And the intent of this bill is essentially modernization and rationalization of the system, where the department can essentially do more for less, with less administrative overlay, optimal use of technology, and preserve adequate funding of the trails. If I may, I'd like to draw, as opposed to going section by section, deal with the bill conceptually.
Mr. Franzen, just hit it at the high levels.
High levels, indeed.
Thank you.
I would say the touchstone of the bill is that we combine two separate payments a snowmobiler will make into one. Currently, we have a registration fee, which is required who drive a snowmobile anywhere in Minnesota, and we have a trail pass for residents to ride on the state trails and the 20-plus thousand miles of Grant and Aid trails. This bill simply combines the two into one fee and eliminates the state trail pass for Minnesota residents. It maintains the state trail pass for out-of-state residents or tourists. It changes the amount of the state trail pass for out-of-state people to conform with our neighboring states. It's no higher than our neighbors. I think we go from 15 to, I believe it's 35. And so there'll be no adverse impact on tourism, and yet that will provide additional funding for our trail system. That's really the heart of the bill. There are several other pieces. We believe that will streamline administrative tasks for the department, preserve the integrity of the dedicated fund. This money is all dedicated to snowmobile purpose, of course. And Mr. Chairman, anytime there's been a fee adjustment in at least the last quarter century, it has come out of this committee, and I have been at the witness stand, where the users, where the snowmobilers have said, we want to change the structure of the fees, we want to increase the fees, all for the purpose of going into the trail system to promote Minnesota. Again, we're here once again, and we come every 5 or 10 years, and we believe that, particularly with dedicating all this money to the trails, it's a sound public policy. There are two other components to this bill in the area of modernization. Oh, one other piece is that under the current trail pass, all of that fund is specifically dedicated to Grant and Aid trails. We have had discussion about a particular dedication of the grant of these funds to Grant and Aid trails again with the department. We believe we have agreement with something that preserves their full management flexibility over the system and yet ensures Grant and Aid funding. We believe it's a good balance. I had dinner with the commissioner last week, and when we do amendments, we will insert something into that. So that's the registration piece, Mr. Chairman. Two other smaller pieces, but they may be a bit more controversial. I think I lost my witness. One deals with the registration stickers you see on the side of a snowmobile. What we are proposing is to replace those numbers with a sticker, which is, we believe, easily visible, that comports to all states in the country with snow, I believe with the exception of Massachusetts. We do have a visual aid of Mr. Hutchinson's snowmobile, which, if the committee would like, I can pass around, but this is, he's a multi-state snowmobiler. This is the sticker for Wisconsin. These are the stickers for Minnesota. Our position is conformity with the other states would be more cost efficient and would also ultimately not only not be an impediment to enforcement, but as we move forward into the future would be a superior way to move to go. I also have an Iowa sticker. You'll see a barcode on there. The reason we believe this is superior is ultimately for enforcement. You can have an equivalent of a radar gun and basically shoot the sticker and record the information, all the necessary information. The technology is there today. The funding for the technology is not. This is blue sky.
Thank you, Mr. Franson. Is there one more?
There is one more. Let me say about the stickers. We are continuing discussions with the department at that point. We are not in, we do have concerns expressed by enforcement. We will continue those discussions to resolve that before the end of the day.
Thank you.
The final piece of the modernization is almost an ancillary piece. It talks about creating what's called commissioner's agents. And that's something we had talked about because there are some snowmobilers in some areas where they may not have internet access where they can access the Department of Natural Resources electronic licensing system, which actually works quite well, or a deputy registrar. And we thought that it would, as we move forward and as technology increases, it would make sense to have the ability to have other outlets issue registration, be it a gas station, a resort, something like that, make it as easy as possible for the consumer. There are no current plans to do so. We think this is a tool, and as technology advances, you could do it. You could register a snowmobile on your iPhone quicker than I can talk, going direct to DNR, and we believe this technology could be employed throughout the state.
Anything else?
I would just say that we have been approached by the deputy registrars. They do have concerns about this. And I don't think, I will obviously let them speak for themselves, but I would put on the record, I think they're concerned that this may bring competition.
We're going to hear from them next.
Exactly.
Episode. They're going to come up as soon as you're done.
Perfectly. I will put on the record, however, we do oppose any fee increase to any third-party vendor, including deputy registrars.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from the deputy registrars. I've got a Jim Hurst and Jeff Orth, whoever else is going to testify. I don't know, Mr. Spooner, if you're going to testify or not. But if you could come up, identify yourself for the record, and just tell us quickly your feelings on the bill. We have a long agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst. I am here today on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. And joining me is Mr. Jeff Orth, Deputy Registrar based in Rochester. To the bill, I will make my remarks very brief. Deputy Registrars are the current licensing agents for the DNR. Currently, individuals have the choice of going to Deputy Registrars or directly to the DNR to receive these types of transactions. And we do have concerns about expanding the potential number of agents that would be allowed to do this. Deputy registrars are unique in that our business model is specific to licensing transactions. We are set up to be self-sufficient based on the filing fees that are generated. And the number of transactions from year to year in this category, like most categories, are very stable. This is not a growth industry. So by increasing the number of agents potentially impacts our business model, which then unfortunately requires us to return to the legislature and say we unfortunately need a filing fee increase to cover this. Within the bill itself, potential agents certainly does, in my opinion, include dealerships. And to that, I point to line 19 on page 1, where the interaction between the dealership and the deputy is removed. Thus, the dealership would be able to be an agent. We think this is not a proper precedent in that a dealership is also the licensing agent in these cases. Furthermore, as far as the combining the trail pass and the registration, while I don't deny the convenience for perhaps the majority of snowmobilers in the state, there is certainly a segment of the population that choose not to do this. And Jeff will be talking about that in a moment, how some individuals in the state do not wish to have a trail pass, in which case then this is a mandate for them to do that. By combining the amount, which is understandable, what it does not do is increase the filing fee that we would lose because of the elimination of the trail pass, which is $1. Snowmobile transactions are the outlier. Within all of our DNR transactions, ATVs, boats, and the like, they're a $4.50 transaction, filing fee. Snowmobiles are the lone outlier, as I said, at only $2. And with that, I'm going to conclude my remarks out of consideration for time, and I would like to turn to Mr. Jeff Orth. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. You could identify yourself, Mr. Orth, for the record.
Yep. Jeff Orth, from the Deputy Registrars Association, known as the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. I'm the current legislative chair and reside in Rochester. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for our opportunity to come here today. I'm also a snowmobiler and a member of MNUSA, an extra miler member, and our association, by the way, is a business associate member. So I think we've got a positive relationship with MNUSA. We service the same Minnesota citizens and have been privileged to be a deputy registrar as an individual since 1981. I think one of the things, you know, we as a snowmobiler, we always want more trails, and we certainly want the ease of acquiring our registration. Situation we have in our state now, you know, we do have the Department of Natural Resources has the, as Representative Mr. Franson indicated, we have a internet option that's available 24/7. We think the system works well. The deputy registrars are open at minimum 40 hours a week and available around the state. And again, what our function is for the original registration and transfers of the snowmobiles. So I guess we disagree insofar as that there's not that there's appropriate access. So with that, you know, we understand and acknowledge that the snowmobiling is a great recreational hobby in our state. Obviously, from Deputy Registrar point of view, it is a key part of what we do, and it is basically the livelihood of our members in our association. So it's very important to us.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Qualm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do agree with what was just stated by the testifier, but I had a question informationally. The dealer $15 pass, is that being made available to dealers in the border, say in Wisconsin and Iowa and the Dakotas, so that they could promote tourism in the state of Minnesota? You know, the trail pass thing?
Did you want somebody from DNR, Representative Qualm?
Whoever might be able to clarify that. I just thought it might be a good way to bring people to Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Qualm. I think Mr. Potter just ditched to leave the room, I think, to go get reinforcements. How about if we put your question, did you have additional comment, or we'll put your question on hold?
Mr. Chair, the only other additional comment I had was I support the opinion of the testifier that there's sufficient access with internet and the network we have. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Qualm. To that point, I guess, Mr. Meyer and Mr. Potter, I just happened to re-register my ATV last week and was kind of surprised. I did it online. Sorry, Mr. Spooner. I was doing it online, and when I got at a certain point, I remember it gave me a transaction number or a authorization number or something. Would that have actually allowed me to go on a trail the next minute or whatever? Would that actually serve as my registration temporarily?
Mr. Chairman, members, if you had printed that out, I believe that our enforcement officers would recognize that as an up-to-date registration. The key is going to be making sure that you have a copy with you or that number somehow so we can verify that.
Do you know, Mr. Meyer, not that I would have listened and paid attention, but do you know if it told me I needed to print that?
Mr. Chair, members, I have no idea.
Well, we'll have
Mr. I can find out for you, though.
Well, you don't need to find out for me, but I would like to hear if you don't tell people that, why you wouldn't be telling them, because I don't remember that. I wrote the number down on a scratch pad, and I don't know if Lieutenant Colonel Rodman Smith would have let me go on just the number being written down or not, but anyway.
Mr. Chairman, just to that point, this is something, as I think Mr. Franzen spoke of, our system is in constant kind of improvement, and this electronic licensing, this electronic registration is something we're looking at more broadly. So at some point in time, rather than a transaction number, I could see a certificate that would be printed out, just like you would if you'd buy a license from a different state, things like that. So moving in the right direction of convenience and things like that is something we take very seriously.
And Mr. Meyer, as long as you're there, the point of the stickers, I thought MNUSA had talked about, I remember at last year's event up north, how they liked the Wisconsin model of both the trail pass and the registration being on one. Don't you have some concerns about that model and the visibility of the numbers still? Are you not supportive of this idea of going to a single sticker?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. The combining of the trail pass and the registration sticker, we have no problems with that. And I think we need to talk about the levels of funding, but that would come again during the biennial budget cycle, making sure that we're maintaining our historical levels of funding. Removing the registration number off of the machines, we do have some concerns about. I'd like to bring down Rodman Smith to talk about those, because I know there's other enforcement agencies that are concerned about that as well. That remains our biggest concern with the bill, is the elimination of the registration numbers on the machines. And then the rest of it, I think we can work out something with the deputy registers, with MinUSA on funding, location of these machines where they should be, possibly. I think of one up by Representative Dill's neck of the woods, going into Voyageurs National Park. You should be able to buy a registration sticker there. You should be able to renew your registrations. We had a similar issue last session where we talked about registering of canoes going into the boundary waters. If you need to register your canoe and you're from... it's not during the week, during normal business hours, you are kind of out of luck because you need to go to a deputy register to do that right now. So, Rodman.
Thank you. And just before Lieutenant Colonel Representative Quam, I kind of walked on your questioning. Did Mr. Meyer answer your questions? Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not the one about, are we utilizing the option with dealers in this $15 Minnesota Trail sticker to do outreach for tourism in like Wisconsin, Iowa, etc., where there's maybe snowmobile dealers, and that way they'd have be able to say, here's a trail pass, and get them to try our wonderful state and trails.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, currently the language that's in the bill are basically for demonstration machines that the dealers utilize. We need to go through and make sure that there aren't any barriers for that within the bill, and work with the author to make sure we correct that. I can think of, again, places where they rent snowmobiles. We want to make sure that fleet is being maintained, much like we maintain rental boats for resorts and things like that. So it's a great question. We'll get back to you on that.
Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel, to help and answer the other issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Rodman Smith, Assistant Director of Enforcement for Department of Natural Resources. The Division of Enforcement, and I've also talked with the Minnesota Sheriff's Association and Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, we have quite a bit of concern with the removal of the registration numbers from the snowmobiles. And although it looks fairly non-controversial, it is controversial, and it's just a one-word change here in this bill, and that's on line 1.25, and that's where they strike the word number and add the word decal. So basically what this proposal would be like is if you only had to drive your car and display your license tab and not a license plate, it'd be very troublesome for law enforcement. We have talked with other states. I've talked with my counterparts in Wisconsin. They miss having the registration numbers. They see it as some barriers to law enforcement and to helping the public. Mr. Franzen and I met a couple months ago, and I gave him a litany of issues enforcement-wise that why this would be troublesome. And we at this time we can't support taking off the registration numbers and just going with the decal.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question may be better put to Mr. Franzen, but I wrote down something that he said here, and I just want to make sure I understand. He said that your organization opposes fee increases, and something about that involves a third party or goes to a third party. And what can you just give me a little more insight on what you said and what you meant?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Purcell, thank you very much for that question. Some of the senior members may have remembered me up here before. When MinUSA has come before the legislature suggesting fee adjustments, it has been for specific purposes: safety, to enhance enforcement, to additional funding for Lieutenant Colonel's folks and deputy sheriffs, and trail development, making trails safer. Every time we ask the legislature for another dollar, we want it to go onto the ground for safety and enhanced trail opportunities. We're very jealous of what we believe is administrative excess. We believe it's in the public policy that gives the citizens the most bang for their buck in leveraging the volunteer system. So basically, our dedication is, and our passion is, to putting money into trail development, trail enhancement, and snowmobile safety. Those are the sole purposes for which we ask for fee adjustments.
Follow-up, Representative Purcell.
Thank you for that, Mr. Branton. And in the, excuse me, in the section two, line 2.26, where we talk about the increases going from 45 to 75, is that all of that increase then is going on the ground? Is that your presumption, your understanding?
Mr. Chairman, Price? Representative Purcell, yes, but we have to modify that somewhere. We're also eliminating a $30 fee. So the net fee, if you are a snowmobile or whoever uses a state trail, there is no fee adjustment. It's more of a rationalization than a fee increase, but regardless of that, the answer is yes. All of this money is dedicated to snowmobile purposes, safety, trail development, trail enhancement. Those purposes I talked about, yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to comment on your temporary license. It probably was dependent on whether the credit card was good or not.
I have to ask my wife.
But I did have a question on the numbers. When the photos went around, and I don't know where they've gone now, but you know, I had to put my glasses on to read some of the numbers on the photos going around, and I was trying to think of out in the field, if they're zipping by at 30 miles an hour, how to read some of those. And I understand the idea of a gun, but I also snow, trees, etc. that may be there. So I think most snowmobilers want to make sure that everybody's doing the right thing and that you know, you don't have unlicensed sleds out there. But I would encourage you to work with the department, because I just think it's important to see that and make sure that everybody's doing the right thing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative,
Mr. Branson.
Thank you for that. That is our intent, to continue conversation, and it is our strong desire and belief that when you consider this next, we will have 100% consensus with the Department of Natural Resources.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just like to do a little outreach for tourism, too, before I get to my question. Following up on Representative Quam, I just found out we had 6 inches of new snow in the Roseau area last night, so everybody's welcome to come on up. How many snowmobiles are registered in the state of Minnesota at this time?
Mr. Franson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, approximately 263,000 to 265,000.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what percentage of those are registered online versus at the deputy registrar's? I'm trying to get some sort of a feel for how the process is working.
Mr. Franson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, I don't have the answer.
We'll see if PNR can answer that question and send it to us electronically if they have a way to divide that up. Follow up, Representative Fabian.
Thank you. And just one last thing. And then for somebody, when we're combining this, for somebody who does not ride on state trails, what is the overall effect of this if they have not been buying a trail sticker in the past?
Mr. Franson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, if you truly have not ever been on a state trail or a grant and aid trail, and that basically exclusively on your own property, there would be a $30 impact. We believe the number of these people has, and this is all anecdotal, exaggerated. A lot of the people who don't buy them are actually trail users and free riders, even if it's 5 or 10 miles to get from their cabin to their ice fishing. They actually do use the trails. That is anecdotal. One effort we did have is that we've had discussions about with the DNR about enhancing enforcement of the trail pass and talking about the most efficient use of law enforcement time.
Thank
we
you.
Thought this would be a good solution.
Thank you. And I do remember last year when we had more snow near home that there was quite a presence on the grant and aid trails of that, specifically to remind members of that issue, or I'm sorry, of the snowmobilers of that issue. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And following up on Representative Fabian's questions and comments, in my younger days when I raised cattle, I had cattle at different sites on my farming operation, and I had a snowmobile because it stormed at times and they had to be fed every day to just make sure I could get to those cattle to feed them. And I guess I do have a concern about people that may have one strictly for work purposes such as that and wouldn't necessarily use the trail system. And you mentioned about 265,000 registrations. How many trail passes have been issued in the past year in the state, for example?
Mr. Franson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I don't want to use this year as a precedent because there are very few trail passes issued because there's no reason to buy one. But historically, I believe the spread is about 20,000. We do not know how many of those people are simply working on the farm. Our belief and our anecdotal experience is the vast majority of these people actually are breaking the law.
So, Mr. Franson, if I understand, about over 90% of the folks that register a snowmobile buy a trail pass?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's correct.
Thank you. Lieutenant Colonel, I'm wondering, I know that farmers are allowed to have ATVs. I can remember one of the neighbors out by the nursery mentioning that one of your fellow COs stopped and was surprised that he was a couple miles from his farm. It always amazes me how the COs know everybody in the entire state and where they live and what they do, but I guess you're just doing your job. He didn't realize he also farmed some land 3 or 4 miles away and was checking. Do they also allow them to have snowmobiles for the same purposes?
Mr. Chair, I think what you're referring to is an agricultural licensure of an ATV, and I don't believe there's anything like that for snowmobiles.
They just have
to be registered.
So they actually do buy a license, the ag folks? Is it cheaper, or they don't have a fee, or what?
Mr. Chair, it's the same license as everybody else.
I'm confused now.
For snowmobiles. Now, there is
on the ATV.
On the ATVs, yes, there is a lifetime ag registration for an ATV that is good until the purchaser of the registration sells that machine, and then somebody else would have to get that registered for ag purposes if they chose to do so.
And, Lieutenant Colonel, in an effort for Representative Anderson, Representative Torkelson, and I to get along so well, is that allowed for tree farmers and row crop farmers, or is that just row crop farmers?
Mr. Chair, agricultural purposes is fairly loosely defined by the courts.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson, no comment?
I would just say that on my ATV, I have both registrations.
Well, you already know what kind of registration I have because I'm no longer in the industry. Representative Dill.
To this idea of the trail pass registration combination, one of the things that I wanted to accomplish in the legislature was to get snowmobile trails on ice put into law. And that was done in my 10 years here, and there are now hundreds and literally multi-hundreds of miles of staked groomed trails on ice on Lake of the Woods and Rainy Lake and all the way down the border clear down to Ely and beyond. And they're specifically in law. And one of the problems that enforcement has come on to is folks who are ice fishing, let's say they live on the Cook end of Lake Vermilion, but they're going down to the Fortune Bay or Pike Bay end, and they're ice fishing, and they're found to be riding on the Grant and Aid groomed Mark snowmobile trail that our groomers that cost $170,000 are grooming every day, and but yet they don't buy a trail registration. Or they use a trail to transition from their personal property out to, for example, a lake where they might be ice fishing. So there's kind of a squishy area in there. And when they realize, I really do think that most of the ice fishermen, until they've been stopped once, and it's pretty common up in along the border, is that they don't really think about that until they've been stopped once. And then they think about it because they know that they're going to be subject to a ticket. I mean, and it's a real gray area because you got a trail corridor that's quite narrow in terms of a lake, but yet they always want to ride on the groom part. They don't want to ride off to the side, and that's where the money and the rubber kind of meet the road there, and that's a a tough issue, but it's black and white if you're riding on a groom-marked Grantonade or state trail. And that's the reason that I think we need to be more cognizant. And when we first tackled this back in the Harold Brace days of MnUSA, there was a move by my senator to say, no, we're not going to have these combined passes because there's too many ice fishermen that don't ever ride on the trail. Well, from my experience, that's just not so anymore. And I just wanted to add that because I've seen it happen over and over and over. Now, with regard to one other point of the bill, I have not heard any controversies at all in the last 5 to 7 years over state trail passes that aren't available, that they aren't available for non-residents. I mean, you can't get any closer to being non-residents than the Canadian border with all the Canadians coming across because they don't have a comparable trail system. But they're able to get trail passes, and they can get them on the weekends and on a Saturday and Sunday. Now, registration would be a different story. But as far as the trail passes, to Representative Quam's question, is they are readily available, and if you don't really have to promote border crossing snowmobile activity because snowmobilers need a place to go, they want a place to go, and they're going to pay the $30 or $35 or whatever the fee is to get over here. But they are available. So, I mean, I think we've kind of crossed all those bridges. Thank you for that time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Dill. I appreciate those comments. Mr. Franzen, the one thing I would say, I would encourage you to work with Representative Hackbart, to work with you and the Deputy Registers and Representative Dill as we go forward. Also, I would hope that we look at the fact if these do get combined, currently the Deputy Registers, I believe, are making one more dollar than you propose. Representative Hackbart's bill proposes, and I hope you'll reevaluate that. I'm not sure that seems to be fair. That would actually, to Representative Purcell's point, you're actually taking a dollar away from them and moving it to develop trails and such, and I think we just got to be sure that folks understand that part of it. Thank you. Appreciate the bill coming forward. Members, that'll be brought up at a future date if it's included.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Next, Representative Wagenius, we have your House File 2228. I believe, Representative Wagenius, we do want to move this bill so you can do an amendment, an author's amendment, I believe you have, and then we'll lay it over for possible inclusion. So we do want to formally move. I believe you have a bill. We have Representative Howes and I all have a bill that have small amendments on them. Members, just trying to get the bills more in the form we'd like, so then when we go forward, if these bills are combined with other bills, we'll have them in the form that the author would like. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 2228. That it be, I would like to move it.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. And Representative Wagenius has an amendment, the A1. Representative Wagenius, do you want to move your A1 amendment?
I'd like to move the A1 amendment, just okay. To put it in the order that I would like it.
Okay. Discussion to the A1. All those in favor of the A1 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, that's passed. Representative Wagenius, now for possible inclusion later, let's hear what your bill is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for having me up here. Members, we have a system in Minnesota who are appraising land to make sure that folks who purchase or where Minnesota purchases land from folks can get the top dollar. And an instance has come up recently that calls this system into question. And the question is, how are taxpayers being treated under the current system? Do we have the correct balance? And this bill is to try a new balance because I think that we have at least one very clear instance where taxpayers are not being treated fairly. So the problem is that you all have not seen this particular proposal yet. It's coming to you. It is in the Legacy Committee. It is part of the Heritage Bill. And it is a acquisition that is being proposed by Trust for Public Land of 1,862 acres It currently has a tax assessed value of $3,800,000. I won't give you all the numbers, but it's $3,800,000. The recommended cost that Minnesotans pay for this piece of property is over $14 million. So there's a $10 million gap between the taxed assessed value and the recommended amount that we pay to acquire this 1,862 acres of land. Okay, I'll tell you a little bit more about this land, because I have no quarrel with the land. It is the price that I am bringing to you. This is some land north of Brainerd, and the tax assessor, when contacted by our nonpartisan staff, said it does have Mississippi River frontage. It is hunting land, and it's good hunting land. And hunting land in that area is going for between $2,000 and $2,500 an acre. This particular piece of land has the Brainerd dump on one side and airport on another side. Another thing that the assessor told us was there's a lot of land. This land is suitable for development, but there's a lot of land up there that's suitable for development and for sale. So, just to give you, I gave you the big numbers. Let me give you the one smaller number before I tell you about the bill. What the tax assessed value is $2,073 an acre. The proposed price that we pay is $7,540 an acre. And I'll give you one more small thing just to give you some perspective here. Staff kindly looked up some other pieces of property for sale in the area that are also on the Mississippi River. And two parcels, and I think we could look up more if we'd like, two parcels came up, and I would just like to cite to you. One is 92 acres in Aiken County with 2 miles of Mississippi River frontage. It's going for $134,900, which is $1,466 an acre. There is another one, 44 acres in Crow Wing County with 3,000 feet of Mississippi River frontage, and that is going for $3,852 an acre. None of these prices are even close to the over $7,500 an acre that is being that the Lessard Sands Council is recommending that we pay for this parcel. So I think we have to look at our system of appraised value and say, is it doing its job? And I'm going to propose, and that's what this bill is an alternative system. And it may not be the right system, but I do think we have to have some change that looks at the taxpayer's interest as well as the person who owns the land. Right now, the commissioner, and this, I'm looking at the bill on line 1.12, the commissioner shall cause the lands to be appraised. That is what the current law is. I'm being a little more direct about it and saying the commissioner shall have lands appraised. So we're not doing away with appraisals. Shall have a lands appraised. Okay. And then the commissioner may pay, this is on line 1.19, may pay less than the appraised value. We should certainly hope so. But not agree to pay more than 20% above the county assessor's estimated market value. And you know, a tax assessor, and we rely on these folks for so much of our Minnesota businesses. These folks are supposed to be within the 105 to 90% range as they do their business. Okay, so we can't pay more than that, or, as the amendment says, 10% above the appraised value, whichever is less. But there is an out here if there is a piece of property that the commissioner of DNR determines that is a high priority. This is on the last page. Because the land is adjacent to other land, would conserve a high degree of biological diversity, or is otherwise a high priority for the department, the commissioner can say, we're going to pay more, and document it. So, bottom line is, we're looking for two folks here, not the taxpayer on one hand, and the person who is selling land. And of course, none of these are mandatory sales. This isn't a condemnation. These are voluntary sales. If we pay a more reasonable price, there'll be more money for restoration, enhancements, or purchases of other lands. And of course, some will say we can't change the system just because we never can change systems around here. But I do come back to thinking we rely on county assessors for the basic business of this state. We have to protect taxpayers here. And as I am thinking of bringing forward a bill, as I have proposed to bring forward a bill to raise money on boat fees, it's hard for me to say we should be raising boat fees, asking for more money, if I can't say we are watching the taxpayer's dime under a microscope. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to take questions or have a discussion about this issue, because I think it's an issue that needs more discussion.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Questions for Representative Wagenius. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wagenius, for bringing this forward. Some of our transactions between parties in the state get rather complex, where we have perhaps one entity purchasing the land and then reselling it to the state in a second transaction. Do you see the your bill having any effect on those complex transactions?
Representative Wagenius.
I do not. If you see some, I'd like you to share them with us. But what we're doing is saying, we're taking one number, and instead of saying that it is an appraised value as kind of our jumping off place, we're taking another number, and that's the market value for tax purposes, and that's our jumping off place. That's basically what we're doing.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Representative, I like your bill, and just wondering, in the example you gave us, how high is the bar set? For example, could the DNR commissioner simply say this is a high priority and pay that $7,000 an acre? Or what kind of a bar is being set to determine that high priority?
Representative Wagenius.
Frankly, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think the bar is very high here. This is pretty loose. And if we wanted to tighten it up, that would be we could do that. What I do say is the commissioner shall document the reason for the determination in writing. And I think all of us, when we write something down, we think it through better. And if the commissioner has lots of reasons that this is a good deal, it's adjacent to other land, it has special features, whatever, and we're not limiting that, really, then I think one of the things we do, everybody will see the market value, which we haven't seen before.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer, you have some comments?
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, and we do have some problems with the bill that's before you today. First of all, if this were to become law, it would create two different levels of playing fields for the sale of private property to the DNR versus somebody else. You may see other entities purchasing more land and holding it. if a nonprofit group can go ahead and pay full market or appraised value, and the DNR can only pay based on estimated market value or 10% above, or have to go through this process that's outlined in the bill, it sets up this uneven playing field. You know, purchase agreements are typically based on a detailed current appraisal that reflects what a willing buyer will pay a willing seller in the open market, and it's not tied to a county's estimated market value for tax purposes. And just a small point on the estimated market value, it's only required to do to be updated every 5 years. And typically counties do a mass appraisal process to estimate market values. They look at all sales from within the county and collect the data and analyze it. Then they adjust the estimated market value accordingly. Recently, we've undertaken our PILT working group, coming back with recommendations to the legislature for next year, and in evaluating assessed values throughout the state presented over the last five-year market period, it's become apparent that not every county assesses land the same way. Ramsey County had land that went up over 400% in value. Some counties had land that went up 7%. The adjacent county may have went down. So county by county, this is not done evenly. It sets up a lot of concerns for us as well. The estimated market value, as Representative Wagenius, I think, spoke of, it's the highest price in terms of money which a property would bring. But, however, it's only done every 5 years. And these properties we're buying, they're very difficult to assess. There may not be comps that are close by. There may be, and I think one of the bigger problems we have, they're valued at highest, they're appraised at highest and best value. So if you look at a tract of raw land, for example, and I'll go back, Mr. Chairman, I know we talked about the Lake Vermilion process acquisition in here several times, but the appraisal on Lake Vermilion, one of them that U.S. Steel had was like $26 or $27 million because it was based on a plat that the County of St. Louis approved. So it was looking at all of the developed parcels or what the value of that land would bring. So those are just a few of the concerns that we have. Going to the appraisal process, which is updates it and looks at the land values, we feel is a more fair process. To the bill itself, the language that it strikes out in 1.2 to 1.2 or 2.2 really eliminates a process that the department has used for a long time, basically balancing our books, so to speak, of below cost and above cost transactions. Typically, we keep track of when we buy a piece of land at below market value because somebody will donate the value or donate land to us. And then we use those dollars to offset or book against when we do pay above appraised value. This eliminates that process, and it also gives us a process to use to establish if it's a priority that we can pay more. In this day and age, we're only interested in buying high priority parcels. We've undertaken, I know we've talked about our land asset management process. We can't conserve everything. We want to conserve the best and try to protect the rest, looking with the counties and other landowners to put easements or things like that in place. But realistically, requiring the DNR only to buy land at appraised or estimated market value or this other process, it really complicates the waters, in my opinion, and we want to be up front talking about what we are buying, looking at appraisals, having several appraisals done on properties. We've recently instituted a new policy whereby any transaction over $10 million will require two appraisals, whether that transaction is being done through Outdoor Heritage Fund, LCCMR, bonding, what have you. Our processes now require that two appraisal and then a certified appraisal review by the DNR. So I understand the concerns people have and where we're at, but I don't think this is the best fit solution to answer those questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Comments, Representative Wagenius?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not land where we're forcing somebody to sell their land to the state. This is not like MnDOT taking a piece of land for right-of-way. It's a whole different situation here. This is a situation where we are purchasing land for conservation, and there is a lot of it available. So what we don't have is the balance of the taxpayer's interest. We have a system that works well for the buyer. I would totally agree with that. But we do not have a system that provides the balance that I think we need at this point. And I think the parcel at Brainerd points that out with bells, that something is not right, and we need to figure out a way to fix it. There may be other ways to do it, but it seems to me that this is the simplest and the easiest.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate this bill being brought in front of us. It gives us a chance to look at the acquisition procedure. I want to point out that, you know, this is defined as the acquisition procedure, not the protection procedure. It's the acquisition procedure for purchasing lands. Commissioner Meyer, looking at lines 1.8 and 1.9, and also that this being the Commissioner of Natural Resources, is, and then line 1.8 for folks in the audience is not one that's being amended, but Commissioner Meyer, is this for both fee title and for easements?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, the bill, as I see it right now, is only for acquisitions. It would be fee title acquisition only. Easements, could we conduct a different appraisal process? I mean, and every easement's different, right? Everything that you buy, those sticks or those little twigs out of that bundle that you're purchasing, will change the value of those easements. A trout stream easement, for example, is going to be a lot less than a forest legacy easement. So it depends on what you negotiate and what the value of that easement is actually set for.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Meyer, I'm looking at 1.8 where it says is authorized to acquire lands or interest in lands, and I'm wondering if the or interest in lands is
an easement.
Yes.
Representative Hansen, I'm going to ask Ms. Taylor. I'm kind of reading it the same way you are, Representative Hansen. Did you get a chance, Ms. Taylor, to see what Representative Hansen's talking about? He's referring to the current legislation and not the proposed changes. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, you know, I haven't had a chance to talk with the DNR, but the way I would read it would also include an easement or other interest in land.
Why don't we ask Mr. Meyer? You can
Mr.
get back.
Mr. Chair, I can look into that, but the concern I have is there's no county assessed estimated market value for an easement, for example.
It is for the property.
So, I mean, for the property, we start off with a full-blown appraisal and then estimate what those values are and subtract them off. So,
thank you, Mr. Meyer. I think Representative Hansen is just making a point. The current statute looks like it may apply, and you can find out, to easements and purchases. I believe Representative Wagenius is zeroing in on purchase here. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also to further clarify, this appears to be only Natural Resources Department acquisitions, not MnDOT or Bowser acquisitions. Is that correct?
Representative Wagenius.
Yes.
Yes. Follow-up. Representative Deal.
Well, I need some help here, Mr. Chairman. What your
Representative
bill
Dill, you certainly aren't alone in that. Representative Dill.
What your bill does is amend how they would operate, but yet it has nothing to do with the Brainerd parcel, as I understand, because that's going to be approved by the legislature in a bill, irregardless of what DNR has to say about it. Because isn't it the $14 million in the legacy bill, the SAMS bill, going to be voted on by the legislature, which would supersede any procedure that the DNR would have? Could you explain that to me so that I fully understand that, how those two are going to relate? Like Lake Vermilion. I mean, the Lake Vermilion parcel was way out of the parameters that they would ever be able to do administratively. And so the legislature came along and blessed it and took them out of the picture, essentially, even though they were the ones negotiating on behalf of the taxpayers.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Representative Dill. You make a good point, and I would agree that we do bless these in the end. The question here is how did it come to be that the recommendation was made to pay over $14 million for this piece of property, and the recommendation was made based on an appraisal. And so that is the problem. And I would bring up to you, Mr. Chairman and members, before we started the legacy bill, when we were debating it, one of the things that we heard again and again, where there were a lot of folks in Minnesota who wanted who had a special piece of land in their family and wanted to give it to Minnesotans at a reduced cost because they wanted Minnesota to manage it forever and for Minnesotans forever. But they were willing to take less money for that piece of land. But we have now, we're not talking about that anymore. Now we're talking about the most money we pay. Something is not right. And I don't know that my bill is the perfect solution. I know that there's a problem out there that we've got to address on behalf of the taxpayer.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, you mentioned in your statement something about willing buyers. Who are the other willing buyers that were interested in the piece of property that we're talking about today?
Representative Pluginius. Are you specifically, Representative Fabian, talking about the Mississippi North
Yes,
Woods?
Yes, yep.
The Potlatch folks in the audience have their head down, Representative Fabian, so I don't think they want to comment on that. And I don't know that Trust for Public Land is here and they want to comment. Representative Fabian.
So the answer to my question, Mr. Chair, is? excuse me. Walk me through the procedure then, Mr. Meyer, on how you arrived at the price.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, that is not a DNR project. That project is one that the Lessard-Sams Council approved, and the dollars would be appropriated to the Trust for Public Land to do the acquisition for and on the behalf of Crow Wing County. The only DNR role would be to certify the appraisal at the end.
Representative Fabian, we will have this project, I'm assuming, back before this committee. It's currently in the legacy division of this committee. The Lessard-Sams bill is there. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the process the same for appraising property when DNR decides to sell a parcel as it is when they buy a parcel?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian. Yes, typically when we go to sell a parcel, depending on the type of land, school trust, concon, tax, forfeit, which the county sell, but if it's DNR acquired land, we would do an appraisal, and that by statute is our minimum bid going into that process, and we sell it all by public auction.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we have students today here from the Hubert Humphrey Job Corps. We'd like to welcome you and give you a round of applause. We are the Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Finance Committee, and we're discussing how land purchases may have parameters on them different than they currently do when Department of Natural Resources would look at buying new land or acquiring new land potentially that maybe someone else is working on a purchase project for them. Next I have Representative Torkelson, Falk, Purcell, and then I do have to get to Representative Howe's bill today. Representative Dill, was it to this point? Representative
no.
Dill after
Thank
that.
You.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, when you first came to the testifying table to comment on this bill, you made some, it, apparently you're commenting that this would make the system unfair for DNR and its approach to purchasing land, but yet when you refer to the language that's proposed to be struck in this bill, can you tell me how that particular procedure where you can pile up money to use to bid on a piece of property is fair and balanced?
Mr. Meyer.
Chair, Representative Torkelson, it really isn't piling up money. It's more keeping track of when we paid below sale versus when we pay above sale. Most of our transactions, as you're well aware, are from dollars. All of our transactions are from dollars appropriated from the legislature, either through bonding, other dedicated funds, trust fund, or the Outdoor Heritage Fund, those types of activities. We don't purchase a lot of land with any Game and Fish Fund receipts, for example, or Park and Trail Fund receipts. So all of our acquisition process is driven through the legislative biennial budget process, and we just keep track of this. This was current law. It is current law that we were asked to do this. So we kept basically a spreadsheet that notified us of where these balances were. Our RIM critical habitat acquisition project, or our RIM, we have a bonding proposal for it. It helps us deal with these issues as well.
Representative Torkelson, follow-up.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, doesn't this process allow you to pay a higher price for some parcels based on this credit that you're accumulating from parcels that are given to you?
Chair, Mr. Chair, members, we are allowed by statute to pay up to 10% over the appraised value. Now, if we're using as the bill is, county assessor's estimated market value or 10% of the appraised value, whichever is less, it's always going to be the estimated market value, just the way the process is. And, you know, when I talk about being unfair, that will push those acquisitions to perhaps a Bowser or a non-governmental organization that won't have this requirement to pay to focus on estimated market value. I mean, if the issue is to focus on acquisitions, I don't know why you would single out the Department of Natural Resources on that issue.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, maybe I'm misreading this, Mr. Meyer. Doesn't this clause that's struck in this language allow you to pay more than the appraised value for a purchase?
Mr. Meyer, I think it allows you to pay up to 10% more than appraised value. That's not being changed from current law, I think, based on Representative Wagenius's amendment.
Right. Mr. Chair, the operative terms start on 1.23 where it says the sum of accumulated differences between appraised amounts and the purchases for more than the appraised amount may not exceed the sum of the accumulated differences between appraised amounts and purchases for less than the appraised amount. So we have to do this sum balance, making sure that we're not paying over by any more than what we paid under. But there is another statute that allows us to pay above 10%. In rare cases, that's similar to the cases that are outlined in pages 2.2 to 2.6, or lines 2.2 to 2.6.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Just one quick follow-up. So then the 10% ceiling applies to these purchases also. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Mr. Meyer, a question I had from your previous comments, you said that the appraisals specifically on this piece of property were about 5 years old, or when you're looking at property, the appraisal might be 5 years in the past versus what current market conditions would be. So the DNR is not doing an appraisal on significant purchases of this size?
Mr. Meyer.
Chair, Representative, no, that's not the case at all. My comments come directly to the requirements that are in Chapter, I believe it's 272, where the county assessors are only required to evaluate the estimated market value on any particular property once every 5 years. So that's why there's usually a lag in estimated market value. And in the cases of raw land, they just may continue that estimated market value at the same rate for the next 5 years because they don't have the expertise nor the time to go back and assess or reappraise these raw pieces of land because every land is different. Trying to compare what one piece of 80 acres of conservation land is compared to your neighbor's farm that may or may not be being farmed is not what they're interested in doing. So when we acquire land, we are required to do an appraisal and have that appraisal certified. We do that every time we do that. And now the process that's going to be doing by requiring us to do an appraisal, that appraisal will show a higher value, I would be assumed, than what the estimated market value is. And then when we share that with the landowner, typically they're going to say no thank you, and they'll go on to somebody else.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it leads to a...
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it leads to a kind of a second question I have. I mean, the DNR is spending resources which are being derived from taxpayers, and another group, whether it's a nonprofit or some other agency, specifically nonprofits, they're going to be spending money that should be coming out of donations to that group. So I guess if they feel it's appropriate to go and spend more and they want to pay more, maybe that's an appropriate thing for some of these nonprofits to be doing. Consequently, I don't know if the DNR or as a state we should be giving necessarily taxpayer dollars to those nonprofits to go and, like you say, compete with you, because then we lose the ability to manage some of these lands. So I don't know if you have some comments to that, but I do think that we're setting up an interesting scenario here.
Mr. Meyer.
Chair, that's really a decision the legislature needs to make, and I just need to say one thing. The DNR doesn't just go out and acquire land because we want to. Our stakeholders are telling us, our citizens, your citizens are telling us, hey, we want you to acquire this, protect that. we want to have recreation opportunities at X, Y, and Z. The statute books are full of those opportunities. So we only acquire land where we have the ability to, and the legislature works with us to acquire those properties.
Representative Wagenius.
If this is the end, I just have one follow-up. No.
I've got Representative Purcell. It was a while ago, Representative Purcell, you had on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of my questions has been addressed, not answered. I'll wait for that with Representative Fabian on how we got here with this piece of property. But question to Mr. Meyer, the language in 2.2 to 2.5 that's added in this bill, does the DNR have any problem with that, being added?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, the only concern I have was that when we were doing acquisitions, most of our acquisitions, if not all of them, fall under those requirements. So now we'll just have to fill out more paperwork to allow us to pay what that landowner, the appraised value, will be, or whatever. I mean,
Representative Purcell.
It may change things, it may not. We're just going to have to jump through more hoops.
Very good. I do believe it would be information that would help us in the decision-making process. So I think it's good language.
Representative Dill.
No, that's all right.
Representative Anderson.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, you mentioned that five-year requirement for county assessors to value these parcels, but isn't that relating more to setting a value for PILT payments, which have to be adjusted every 5 years? And that's the reason for that five-year requirement?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, actually it's 273.08 in state statute that says the assessor shall actually view and determine the market value of each tract or lot of real property listed for taxation, including the value of all improvements and structures thereon at a maximum intervals of 5 years and shall enter the value opposite each description. So that's the five-year requirement. There's a provision within 477A dealing with payment in lieu of taxes that allows a county to be base their payment on the valuation of land. It's 0.75% of the appraised value, which does increase once every 5 years. So it's tied off of that estimated market value. But I can tell you this, looking at those estimated market values, I do not believe it's in some cases a fair and just percentage to base property values off of. And one of the things we're hoping to come back with through the PILT study is giving the state the ability to question what those assessors' values are on property. We need to have some kind of ability to appeal assessed values of land, just like an average homeowner does, because some of those values we do not agree with. So.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. I've got Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wagenius, for bringing this bill forward. It's presented the platform that's opened up a lot of good discussion today, and I'd like to go back to what you said, Mr. Meyer, about the stakeholders are telling you to buy certain pieces of property, and I appreciate that, but I also, we've had these conversations before, I also want to make sure that I'm on record as making sure that you understand that my stakeholders, my constituents, are basically asking the DNR to divest themselves of some of the land in my area. Let's continue those discussions, please.
Representative Dill.
This isn't specifically to the bill, but a lot of people in here don't serve on legacy, as Representative Wagenius and I do. The one thing I can say about this got started because of the Lessard bill and the $14 million in the land for the Mississippi purchase up by Bringer. That's how this whole thing got started. But PILT has come up here time after time in this committee, relative to this bill. I have to tell you that in looking at the Lessard-Sam bill, and this is for the benefit of those who don't serve on that committee, that group is getting very, very crafty at how to avoid obligation for paying payments in lieu of taxes. And this parcel is an example, and let me give you the answer to the question. When I asked the county commissioner if the taxpayers of Crow Wing County knew that a alleged $14 million piece of property was going to come off of the tax rolls in Crow Wing County, I got a definitive answer of really nothing, except that I gathered from his comments, trying to paraphrase him, that the value of the land for recreation was worth more than the amount of taxes that were being paid. Now my question is, there following that, because it wasn't answered, is, you know, how much is that and how many people in Crow Wing County really know what's going on with regard to that inside baseball, I think. Look through the bill, the Lessard-Sands bill. I'm for the bill, but they're getting very crafty at avoiding PIL. And the obligation for Lessard-Sands to continue paying those obligations as DNR would if they owned the land themselves. So just a word of caution that all of these things play into a bigger picture than just the 10% or 20%, or if the DNR just has the latitude to buy that, or some other state agency has. It's a broader discussion than just in here in this bill. Thank you.
Representative Wagenius, final comments on it. We do have a couple more bills. Representative Wagenius.
Well, yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope we have some additional discussions here because I have far more confidence than our tax assessors than Mr. Meyer does. But I do want to tell you that there was an article in the Star Tribune this morning, which I brought for each of you, that brought up a different issue with regard to this particular purchase and this particular way of third-party purchases, where once the purchase is made, the landowner donates a certain amount of money back to the group that arranged for the purchase. This is a charitable contribution because it is not for actual expenses. Actual expenses we pay for. There's no question about that. If it's going to be surveyed or lawyer's fees, that's paid for. But this is over and above that. So that question has come up. That is the Star Tribune story. And I think we have to ask the question in this committee at some point, is that even constitutional, because the land, the money is only to protect, enhance, and
thank you, Representative Wagenius. And those points are well made. And I would encourage Representative Purcell, Representative Hancock, Representative Fabian, all live. This project could be on your way home. It's only a couple minutes off of 371, just between the Brainerd Airport and the Brainerd Landfill. And I would encourage you, I made a second visit to the site myself on Friday. It is an interesting site. It's rather vast, rather large. Has a large amount of property on frontage on the Mississippi River. Representative Hollis, why don't you go ahead and come forward. I would encourage, this is $14 million. This is the Environment Finance Committee. We will spend time looking at this. People should be aware that this is a huge purchase and is really on a fast track. Representative Hollis, I will move your House File 2343 for possible inclusion in a later bill, but you do have an amendment. Members, I'd like to move the House File 2343 A2 amendment. Discussion to the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor of the A2 say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A2 is adopted to your bill. Representative Howes, if you want to explain your bill, I apologize. I made a mistake not letting you go ahead of Representative Wagenius. We have a policy in this committee of letting members that aren't on the committee go first. Originally, we thought we'd bunch yours and my bill together, but I should have known that Representative Wagenius' bill was going to take a while.
Well, thank you.
Representative Howes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll remember that when you come before my committee.
I'm sure you will. I'll have it coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill simply allows the electronic purchase of fishing and hunting licenses if there is another government shutdown. The amendment that was put on the bill allows MMB to transfer money from the general fund to other state agencies, and I would assume that's the DNR in case they have to have one or two FTEs at the other end of the electronic transfer or the telephone. Also, Mr. Chairman, it is my hope and my wish that this committee would allow this. Plus, I think you have a bill following me that deals with parks and trails or something to that effect, that this bill could also at some point in the near future be sent out as a standalone. I trust your omnibus bill. I don't trust this particular year and the political atmosphere that there might be a meltdown, and I'd like to get it out of Dodge as soon as possible. Representative Ostoff and Representative Kahn taught me that a long time ago, to have it planted in many places to make sure it gets passed.
Well, thank you, Representative Howes, and I do think I think there's going to be another bill dealing with the Minnesota Zoo that'll probably end up in this committee, and potentially those three bills could be merged together in one, and I see the potential for them to go forward. Representative Hackbart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I did talk to Representative Howes about this amendment. I'm going to offer an oral amendment on line 1.2. The words "enacting the Freedom to Hunt and Fish Act of 2012 and delete line 1.7 and 1.8. We discussed this, and Representative Powell agrees with me that we can delete that.
Ms. Taylor, could you read the amendment or the bill as amended by Representative Hackbart?
Mr. Chair, members, actually, if you look at the A2 amendment, that was included within that.
Oh, okay. Representative Hackbart, we actually did move that. It went pretty quick.
Thank you.
I learned that from you, Representative Hackbart, to just get things going. So discussion, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that was my point. And Chairman Howes, I don't think we want to get into branding legislation. It could open up a lot of naming rights discussion. I can think of some other creative things we could call other bills, and so I think it's been precedent not to name legislation in statute and or session law, so I agree with what Representative Hackbarth is doing and the chair on his authors.
Representative Hackbarth.
And thank you, Representative Hansen and Mr. Chairman. To Representative Howell's credit, he didn't want that in there either. The bill came from the Senate, and the Senate put this language together. So.
Representative Hackbart, we're used to fixing bills this year in the Senate. I don't have any additional comment, Representative Howes, so we'll lay your bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Howes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next, members, I've got House File 2371. Ms. Taylor, why don't you just explain quickly what 2371 would do?
Mr. Chair and members, 2371 would do a similar thing for state parks. It would provide money for the management and budget that could also, with the amendment, be transferred to the DNR if necessary to keep the parks open if there was a shutdown situation.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer, I would like to get your comments. It was frustrating last summer in a lot of respects, but we'd like to see this get potentially get moved, and I'm hopeful you're supportive of our efforts here. We don't
Mr.
ever want
Chairman,
to see it again.
Members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, and the bills before you, just a little bit of factual information on Representative Howes' bill. We estimate we need about 2 to 3 FTEs to help deal with the agents out in the field resolving problems and things like that. Obviously, this will be right before the 4th of July season when this would have to go into effect, hopefully not. We do generate about $4.5 million in hunting and fishing license sales during the month of July, about $4 million in August, so it is an important time for us. The parks piece of it, during that same peak weekend, those weeks in July, our expenditures are about $500,000 a week to keep the park system running, parks and trails, actually parks and state rec areas up and running. So we would want to make sure, Mr. Chairman, that those dollars are available to keep the system running and that we do have the employees and the support staff to make sure our parks are safe and operating efficiently and people are having extremely pleasurable experiences. So
thank you, Mr. Meyer. Members, I forgot to move House File 2371 for possible inclusion later. I'd like to move House File 2371 and get it before us. Next, members, I'd like to offer the JTA 05 amendment. It's in your packet. It states, as necessary, the commissioner may transfer a portion of this appropriation to other state agencies to support carrying out these functions. I'd like discussion to that amendment. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, that amendment's adopted. We've got the bill in the shape that I'd like when it comes back before us. Any additional discussion? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is the third bill like this, and I expect we're going to have more that's accommodating failure. It's accommodating a shutdown and putting the state government on autopilot. The simplest way to deal with this, the insurance policy, Representative Quam, is to not have a government shutdown. I mean, that's the solution. That's what the public wants. So all through this session, we're having bills and amendments introduced to put us on accommodating failure, accommodating going to a government shutdown again and in the future. And the simple solution is work together, pass the bills, get our budget done on time when we adjourn, and not go into shutdown again.
Thank you. Additional comments? Members, unusual for us, but we are going to get done early. Sure. I would encourage Representative Canoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is just a question. I wanted to wait until we were done with our bills, and we have a few minutes, so I thought I'd ask. You know, there's a bill going through that I have a lot of concerns about related to some environmental issues, and it's going through. It's a Beard bill, House File 2169, and it's, I think, in state government operations and state government finance this week, and I just wanted to touch base with you to see if you'd be asking that bill come to this committee, because it does have significant impacts on the agencies that this committee has jurisdiction over, and, you know, so we don't have to do the whole rigmarole of re-referral on the floor and that sort of thing. I was just curious if you would be requesting that bill to come to this committee.
You know, Representative Canute, I'll look into it. I'm not familiar with the bill, and how about if I let you know? I'm not familiar with the bill, and Representative Beard is unfortunately evidently had to leave early, so okay. Why don't I get back to you with that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, we're adjourned.